Okay, for our first speaker, and the topic is looking for love in all the wrong places, is a gentleman from the Central Maryland area, and his name is Walston B.
I'm an addict named Walston. And real grateful to be here. First thing I want to do is thank the committee for asking me to participate in this process to help further my recovery. Something real special about having the opportunity to share your experience, strength, and hope. And especially on a topic like this. I don't know why they gave me this topic. But I think the Creator does. I want to thank the gentleman that's sharing the podium with me. I won't call his name because I want him to get his introduction just like I got mine. But it's an honor to share the podium with him. All right. Is that better? Okay. How about that? As I loosen up, you can bet I won't even need the mic. Yeah. I'm just trying to put a little heat to the cooker right now. I'm excited about recovery. I mean, I've been here for a minute, but every opportunity I get to express the gratitude I have for this process, it becomes overwhelming. It's like there's no verbiage to really explain the unexplainable. I mean, to come from a crack house where you sitting in there with a stem about that big, broke on one end, tape on the other end, and you can't leave because you know somebody on their way in, they're going to need to bar that. Or you're in an oil joint scraping bags, you know, so you can get some legs up under you. So y'all know what I'm talking about. To a place where somebody thinks enough of you to ask you to talk about your experience with love. You know, and there's so much to be said about that. But the topic, when they said looking for love in all the wrong places, confused me. I know early on there was a lot of confusion around my understanding of love. I really had a dislike for self in the beginning, just with the mispronunciation of the name Walston. I mean, how many of you heard of a dope fiend named Walston? Yeah, I struggled with that thing from the very beginning. And then I remember the arguments in the household. I'm a little kid. I'm 6 years old. I'm in Alexandria, Virginia, and my father is abusing my mother. And the feelings that gave me were feelings that had me into what I call a spiritual warfare, if you will. And I remember taking those same sort of behaviors into relationships that I would have moving forward. But I want to make reference to one of our new pieces of literature. Excellent, excellent reading. Yes. Living Clean. Yes, yes. On page 131, it says, the basic text tells us that love is the flow of life energy from one person to another. This is essential to what we do. We connect with others and through them to a power greater than ourselves. Opening up to the world around us is a spiritual awakening. So that you know, just reading that gave me some sense of understanding about my journey, because it's real easy for me to get caught up in how messed up my journey had been until the grace intervened. But what I found out as a result of getting involved with a sponsor and doing a little step work was that everything I went through, I had to go through to become the person I'm becoming today. You know, it was destined for me to kind of experience some of the conflict with self. You know, coming from a place of such low self-esteem where, you know, I had to put on a mask. Somebody going to talk about that in a minute. But I masked up real good because I just told y'all the little boy wasn't all right with himself. So I come up from Alexandria, and my mother moved to Northeast D.C. I'm by an infamous housing project called Lincoln Heights. And if you don't know what Lincoln Heights is, just think about the worst neighborhood in your city, and that's Lincoln Heights. And so early on, I had to figure out a way to cope. And I remember going to my crib and after school and standing in front of a mirror and just mugging at myself. I can't even do that shit no more. It takes so much energy, man, to just mug at yourself. You know what I mean? But I practiced that thing, man. I practiced that thing till it became an art, till it became a way of keeping people away from me. Because I ain't know how to love nobody, because what I was taught in my house was stuff like, you pimp or die, don't let them see you cry. You know, all that old craziness, man. Soldiers die with their boots on. And for the newer guys, don't tell on your mans and them. I'm talking about, I was working with some principals, y'all, that had me really conflicted. But they helped me get to a place where I was able to practice them like they say practice. You know, I'm thinking is what I'm talking about. Because, see, I couldn't go on 14th Street and talk about, I'm feeling a bit inadequate. Can I get two billies? That's not what you do in them neighborhoods we come from. So, you know, this journey took me places, man, and in spite of that, some things happened good for this guy. You know, I played ball in school, and I was relatively good at it, and I was able to go out in Oregon and play some sports. But all the relationships I got into, the same behavior that I heard seen my father exhibit, I exhibited. And I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, because I didn't do nothing and sustain it. I completed nothing. Because drugs, see, I didn't know I had a disease that which y'all say is progressive. It's incurable. What? I hear you. That means you're going to die. But I ain't know. I didn't know that I had a disease that was, it's hard to detect. You can't diagnose it, and there's no treatment for it. But when at the end of the road, thank God for the end of the road. But I hadn't gotten there yet. I'm in Oregon and I'm still playing ball and I still think I got it going on. And so I'm fake pimping because I'm really not that kind of material. I can say that today. You know what I mean? But I tried to do these things, man, to help me feel better about myself. So the low self-esteem guy became a walking egomaniac. I'm talking about a guy that was a contradiction in his body. So the war with self became one of me just being all right with being crazy. Yeah, you know how you get comfortable in your uncomfortability? Yeah, well, I'd rather walk through the alley than walk on the street. No bullshit. I'm talking about sleep on a mattress with no sheets rather than put clean sheets on the mattress. You talk about looking for love, I engage whoever got the money. Oh, y'all ain't hear that part. I'm talking about when I did a fourth step, and you had to find out who the hell you was, and the sponsor said, you write everything. I said, you mean you write that too? He said, yeah, put it down on paper. And I put it down on paper, and I brought it to him. He looked at it. He said, oh, so was you the pitcher or the catcher? Oh, y'all still ain't caught that. You ain't got to catch it. I caught it. I know my story. I'm just trying to tell you the process I had to go through to figure out what love was. Because somewhere in here, it says something about when you think you're looking for a relationship or love, you were settling for. I know y'all know this stuff. I'm just the one they asked to do this. See, I'm talking about, I got to expose me today because I need a whole lot of help. But you're going to get your turn. And if you want to get better, you got to come up here, man, and tell the truth on yourself. You got to tell the truth on yourself when your peers in the room. When the people that you care about, that you wonder how they're going to look at you when you finish talking about how cruddy you can be. Because, see, I take from people. I'm not a real nice guy. And people today see a whole lot in me, and that blows me. It's a part of me that ain't been to the group yet that just wonder, what the fuck is this all about? When is the meeting going to be over? I mean, you don't get the rush off of this. Man, right here, this is a key piece. So I went to Atlanta. I got married to my first wife. had my first son. I was shooting heroin in Oregon. When I got to Atlanta, I got on methadone. I added cocaine. I started shooting cocaine and heroin and drinking meth. And they was and the country boys in Atlanta was drinking our cough syrup too. So I said, well, pass the bottle. And they had Red Devils. So, you know, and I like a little vodka with mine, so I'm talking about, man, I was messed up from the floor up, right? So I'm doing all this stuff, and I remember one day going into my home, and my wife said something to me that upset me. And you know, and I don't like saying stuff like this, but it's my story, y'all. And if you judge me, the people that's judging, you know, you don't really matter. And the people that matter, they ain't judging. So, you know, I hit her on her jaw, right, and I dropped her. And the insanity and how messed up I was, intoxicated I was, I kicked her. And the moment of clarity came over me through that. And I left. And I returned here. That wife died of cancer, and she raised our son to be a graduate from Princeton University. But God saw fit to save me and let me be at the graduation. The book says some of us are never ready and struggle all our lives. We know members who are scholars of our principles, but have many failed marriages behind them. We also see newcomers struggle, stumble into a relationship, and somehow make it work. So that was the first marriage. Let's talk about the second one. See what I do is I find a girl that's got a crib, and if she got a car, she really. I know I'm not by myself. Just do like that every now and then. I know. So my second wife, her father was a police. But check this out. Both of us were using, but she was on crack, so I thought she was a little worse off. Man, look, we stayed married for 13 years, and I stayed even using in a monogamous relationship for 13 years. And she fucked around and found my works. So she said, you need to go. You need some help. I got clean first, and I had the opportunity to take her to detox. Yeah. So, you know, we moved forward because, you know, we got a divorce and so forth. And I'm growing up even in my addiction. Because, see, I'm digging from my bottom. I don't know this. But no addict will stop using until they have what? Reached the bottom. So I don't know I'm digging from my bottom, but I'm digging like a mug because I'm getting shot on Central Avenue. Yeah, I'm getting on endocarditis around my heart. I'm talking about it's going to be a funeral, and I was going to be the star attraction. I could not postpone the funeral because I couldn't stop using. I wanted to stop. You ever wanted to stop using and can't stop? I would go in at night and say, man, I'm not doing that shit tomorrow like I did today. And the next day before noon, I'm back on. I'm somewhere trying to find a vein and tell them, hurry up and get that in. Blowing like a bullfrog. And then I mess around and got to Narcotics Anonymous because I caught an arrest. I'm trying to fast forward this because I'm talking about the love thing was something that I began to find as a result of seeing people get here before me. I remember going to my first meeting and the guy was leading the meeting named Dog. I call him Dog. Some of y'all know who I'm talking about. But Dog, I felt, was worse off than me. Dog left me at JR's Oil Joint on 6th Street. And when I last saw him, he had his pants down around his ankles. He had just oiled in his groin and he was standing there rocking and shit. He had got a decent head, right? He said, man, life don't get much better than this. And I was oiling in my neck saying, you need to get you some help. No bullshit. But check this out. When I got to my first meeting, guess who was leading the meeting? My motherfucking man. I said, who is that dog? Boy, I stand a chance. Yes, sir. I'm talking about the love I got in here was a love that I couldn't put a description on. You know, see, because I messed up all the time. I came in here, y'all was raising y'all hands. I'm on my name is Walston. I wasn't Walston on Central Avenue. As a matter of fact, we don't have names on the street. That's Slim. Toolbox. You're skunking them. Woo, boy. Man, look, if you ain't having fun in recovery, man, it's like sex. You ain't doing it right. And sometimes I've been struggling with that lately. I ain't mean to say that, but I'm telling the truth up here, y'all. Man, I'm talking about learning how to love and be all right with who the fuck I am, not who I want you to think I am. Wow. See, I'm trying to grow up, man, all the way to the end. Wow. I don't know when the end coming, but I'm going to enjoy the ride because I know it's like I got more behind me than I got in front of me. And, man, since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous, I have never lived better. I've been able to go back to school, get a master's degree, fuck around, get a license. I'm talking about I can put 6 alphabets behind my name legally. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that because a new person need to know that you don't just get your teeth in here. You fuck around and get so much more. You just got to keep coming back and let us love you till you learn how to love yourself. The book says so many of us struggle with the fear that we will never have a partner. And that not having a life partner means we will always be alone. This kind of fear leads to panic and to pain. When we are lonely, sad, or trying to distract ourselves, we may be willing to settle for things that are not actually what we want in the long term. When our priority is simply not being alone, we are likely to compromise our values or our priorities to commit too quickly to a person we are just getting to know. There's an old saying, be careful what you pray for. Yeah, because y'all know how we do. I put the bag on God. And then he give it to me. And I'm like, wait a minute, God. I ain't mean like that. Because you just might get it. Or we settle for sex when what we really want is love. I don't know about y'all, man, but for so many. Man, my first addiction was sex. Yeah, I was addicted to sex. When the little girl says, show me yours, I'll show you mine. Y'all remember that? Thank you, man. I just want to know I wasn't alone. And that thing, man, because see, I'm addicted to feel good. I thought I was supposed to feel good all the time. And sponsors say, man, if you felt good all the time, you wouldn't need a God. You see, so the paradox of the program starts to unfold when I recognize, like I was saying earlier, that all the stuff I went through, I had to go through to become the person I'm becoming today. See, because God saved me for a reason. He knew I had some stuff to do. Some stuff that only I could do, just like some stuff that only you can do. And so the guy that stood before the judge and said, Your Honor, I promise to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God, had the opportunity to stand on the other side of the bench and raise his hand to defend the Constitution of the United States of America. That don't make me popo now. Because we ain't under surveillance at any time. What that makes me is an officer of the court. Yeah, yeah. I'm a mental health therapist and I work with men that are just as crazy as me. That ain't got the program yet. And they don't want to be where we got them. And so I got to engage these men. But they don't want to be there. They're in 10, 15, 20 years. They got schizophrenia, bipolar. You know, I got the same thing. You don't know? The little man be talking to me all the time. So we kind of connect, you know what I'm saying? Because see, as a result of doing my fourth and fifth step, I looked the world in the eye today. I walked around for a long time, bent over. You know, I fucked around, did my fifth step, and I stood up and found out I was 6'2". I'm talking about I dropped 1968 off my back, man, in 1992. But I got to keep doing it. Because, see, I was married to my third wife for 16 years. Yeah, three of them, all right? For 16 years. I'm talking about I came in the room sharing about how she helped me learn the value of the 11th step because of her renal failure. So I'm talking about this lady was a diabetic. She started having kidney problems and shit. She was going to Dallas, going to work, going to dialysis, coming home, cooking our meal. And y'all was telling me stuff about the creativity of the steps. So I was trying to figure out how can I help her because she was coming home looking like death. And I love her. Notice how I said that. I didn't say I loved her. I said I love her. So I said, well, the creativity. I started running her bath water and putting candles around the tub. You dig? And when she come in, I said, baby, you want me to cook dinner tonight? I was 52. It was about time for me to learn. She said, no, honey, that's all right. That's all right. She would cook, so I would bathe her and rub her and then massage her body without intercourse. My teachers taught me stuff like give everything and expect nothing. You see that? See, I shot at nothing for a mighty long time and hit it with amazing accuracy, right? So now I got some, yeah, I did that shit all the time. So now I got some absolute principles, man. I'm talking about they perfect, right? I'm shooting at a target now. Even if I don't hit the bullseye, y'all, you know what I'm saying? I'm on target, man. I'm in the ball game. I'm not what I once was. I ain't what I want to be, but guess what? I'm sure better off than I was. And that's because I'm hanging with y'all. I'm letting y'all love me, and I'm loving you back. So if you're in there struggling with that shit, you know, just keep coming. Because people are going to come up on you and hug you when you don't want to be hugged. That's right. We're going to ask you stuff like, you all right? And you're going to say, yeah. And you're going to say, well, I want you to tell your face. Huh? Ain't that what we do? And then you're going to laugh through, even when you don't want to laugh. Because it's healing and humor. That's love. See, I thought love was, like I said, getting, how about hitting that thing 3 times? You did it 3 times? Boy, I'm not doing it like that no more. So I got to learn the real definition of love, man. I got to learn how to give a me, man. Even when I ain't getting back what I think I'm supposed to be getting. Because I'm always supposed to be thinking I'm getting more than what I get. I never have enough of anything. It was always about me getting more. I got big boys' toys now, but I want more. Man, the dude that taught me in jail, I had to get my treatment in jail, y'all. Because I couldn't just go volunteer in a joint, sit down and get no coffee and share. They'd have locked my ass up. No bullshit. But when I left, man, I was ready. I was just right for y'all. I had dug my bottom. I didn't want to go back there. I knew I was going to die. The next one was going to be the one that was going to kill me. So it wasn't going to be no next one because I'm going to stay with y'all. And I stayed with y'all, man, and I've been having so much fun. I don't have enough time to explain it, you know. But this third wife, I'm loving her. We got a home, nice big house. You know, I got the dog, but I don't want the dog. Y'all know what I'm saying. I got the white fence, but I don't need a white fence. Right? The big TVs, all that. But is this tranquility and peace? Hey. I'm talking about I got diagnosed with a pituitary brain tumor, and the doctor said, have you been seeing any prolactin, any dripping from your breast? What? I said, why you asking me that? He said, because you got imbalanced prolactin levels. Prolactin is the hormone that produces breast milk. And I was like, what is you talking about? But my pituitary tumor was imbalancing my hormone production. So, of course, by me having increased prolactin, it meant I had decreased. Y'all know some shit. Yeah. So I get a non-invasive procedure where I take this medicine, right, and I went back to my lab work and I found out that the prolactin was going down and this group process here, was coming back up, right? So now I'm at the podium, and I'm sharing, and when people come in the room, ladies, I'm looking at the ladies, and I'm telling sponsees that you avert the eye when you on your six-step problem, defect, or lust. Don't do that, but I'm doing that. I forgot 7 come after 6, so I ain't asking God for no help. Long story short, when she showed up, and I was working nice, and she lived up the street from my house, I went up the street. Yeah, and I made a decision. I made a real bad decision, y'all. Yeah, a lot of my friends know about the decision. I was walking around Ocean City a few years back with that decision on my arm and shit. And people was questioning my sponsors about it. And they were saying, ask them. Because they love me like that. But it wasn't right. I said it then, I said now. And I still love my wife, my ex-wife. That's what she is now. House sold. Yeah. We can laugh about it now. It still ain't funny to me. It is what it is. I don't have enough time to just talk about love. They just asked me to come up here and do the best I could, and I've tried. You know what I mean? Because that's the 12th step. And I got some people in my life to help, that love me, man. Love me so much. Even the ones that don't love me loving me, they just don't know it. See, there's some couple words in here called paradox and oxymoron that I use to help me get better. What they do with what they process is what they do. But see, somebody wrote somewhere that people come into your life for a reason or season or a lifetime. I don't try to figure it out. I just try to love a man to the best of my ability. The 12 steps say love him unconditionally. I'm not really quite that good. But I just told you I'm shooting at some absolute principles. You dig? So I don't have these chains and strings attached to relationships today. You can stay or you can go. And I ain't no bad dude to be around, for real. Get to know me before you judge me. Because I'm going to love you. Because love is like loving me. So, man, I think I'm going to get out the way, man. I got this 5-minute thing. I probably said enough. I got a whole lot more shit I wanted to say, but y'all know how it goes. That's my story. I'm sticking with it, y'all. Thank you.
Okay, if you're going to leave and not stay for the next speaker, but you can leave through that back door, do not leave through the one on the other end. Please go out that back door. And for our next speaker, first I want to thank Walston for giving us a really good meeting. And for our next speaker, and the topic is The Mask Must Go, is a gentleman I met out here. And a lot of y'all know him already. And so without further ado, I give you Eric J.
My name's Eric and I'm an addict. I want to thank Walton for sharing. I was sitting up here while he was sharing, right? And it's funny. Can y'all hear me now? I'm sitting up here while Walton's sharing. And toward the end, he got to talking about, first of all, check this out. You know, because we ain't going to be here long. The topic is The Mask Must Go, right? What is a mask? Right? What's the definition of a mask? With my own twist with it, my own shit, right? Ain't that funny? Look, is an apparatus, a defective apparatus, right? For its sole purpose of entertaining, disguising, right, or protection, right? So my sole purpose of having a mask is for entertaining, disguising, or protection, right? Now, the thing is, those three components, entertaining, disguising, and components, and I'm using this defective apparatus to do that, what am I holding inside of me that I don't want to bring out, right? What is it that I'm afraid to disguise to God, right? The purpose of a mask is to prevent me from bringing out something, right, that I think is a bad thing to bring out. But in reality, Y'all told me a long time ago, never go upstairs unsupervised. Right, right. So if I was to run this past my sponsor, right, on what I think that it's a shame to tell y'all, then he will have the insight to tell me, man, that's the step that you want to come out. Why? Because the beginning of the book says the solution is spiritual in nature. Anything that's spiritual in nature that I'm trying to prevent on coming out is a problem. It's a problem, and it's a defective problem. Because anything that's spiritual in nature is what God want me to give to you all. It's a sad thing when I feel ashamed of the story that got me here. When that story was good enough for God to get me here, I got to create another one for y'all to accept me. Man, that's a serious problem. That, look, my clean day, April the 18th, 1994, right? A brother out of nowhere. The brother lived in Florida. We don't get in touch with each other every day. We was raised up as young kids together. He about 30 minutes ago, he just shot me a Facebook picture, right, of, man, this blew me away. He just sent me a picture when I was 12 years old, right? 12 years old, right? I was like a child prodigy, right? I could have went to any performing art institution in the country. I was 12 years old. Right, and he sent me this picture, and I'm holding my first talent show trophy, right? Look, I mean, it's a wild little trophy. It's a wild little picture, right? Because it brought back so many memories, man. It brought back a time when it's all right to be like a kid, man. You know, let me set the record straight. I come from a place like Beverly Hills, California, right? I had a big brother, right? I had a mother and a father, right? Only thing you heard in my household was good morning, good night, yes ma'am, no sir, right? Television was good, Green Acres, Pettigo Junction, Leave it to Beaver, all that stuff, right? Look, but one day, like, a knock at the door came, right? And a knock at the door was from Child Protective Service, right? Now, I'm a little kid. I don't know nothing about Child Protective Service. All I know is that I'm in a household. I'm with my moms. I'm with my pops. I'm with my oldest brother. And, you know, I'm happy, man. A knock at the door come, right? The knock at the door changed my life, right? The knock at the door is from Child Protective Service, right? They took me from this household. Come. What happened is, the folks that I thought were my real parents were my foster parents, right? Now, they relocated me, check this out, from Beverly Hills, California to Southeast D.C. Now, I don't know what the fuck. I don't know about you, but I don't know. All I could do was cry, man. Look, I'm telling you some good shit, man. Every night I would cry, man. Every night, you know, they took my brother and I. Every night I would cry. I would cry, man. I would say, man, when we going back home, man? Look. My first year anniversary, man. April the 19th, right, 1995. My brother told me, Eric, I knew they wasn't our real parents. I just couldn't tell you that. 1995. So I'm living with resentment, anger, fear, something that we call a triangle self-obsession, right? I'm living with this package from the day that goddamn knock at the door came to April the 19th, 1995. Right. So it was easy for me to see why I use. Look, fuck that. I use. I don't know about nobody else. All that motherfucking bullshit. Look, man, it was really about the getting the use and finding ways and means to get more. I smoked every motherfucking thing. Look, I smoked a joint of weed one day. When I blew that motherfucker out, I was cracked. All I know, through the whole process, my story changed, right? That's why I can interact so good with folks, man. You know, I've been institutionalized all my goddamn life, right? Just to fit in over in Southeast, man, you know, I was with some guys. You know, I was a good kid, man. You know, when you say good morning and motherfuckers laughing at you in the household like you crazy, you know what I mean? And, you know, it wasn't no taking baths by yourself. You know, you had to take baths two people at a time. Oh, somebody in here know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know what I mean? Look, just to fill in, I went out with these guys one day. I had just done a Summer in the Park show up in Lincoln Park, right? I had just signed a goddamn contract for Summer in the Park Showmobile, right? Department of Recreation, right? To travel with the entertainment, right? That Monday, I was on a bus going down to see the No Children's Center, right? My sister walked in the courtroom, right? Because these guys who I wanted to just be social susceptibility, you know, I think equals recovery now. Back then, I thought it equals friendship. But look, so I'm hanging with these guys. They robbed the paper boy. I ain't no goddamn. I'm a good kid. I got my name on the back of my motherfucking shirt. That's how the police identified me. You motherfuckers. They came to my mother's house and say, because my mother cussed, you know, she arguing with him. That scared motherfucker. He ain't robbing no motherfucking body. You know what I mean? No. And the police say, oh, it's him. And the way they identified him, he turned around his name on the back of his shirt. So look. So I'm on, check this out. I'm on a bus, right? I'm on a bus going down Cedar Knoll Children's Center. Look, check this out. I get down Cedar Knoll Children's Center. We had this preacher named Father Kemp, right? I mean, Father Jennings. Father Jennings say, if you go to church every Sunday, you have a choice. You can get some candy or you can get a pack of cool cigarettes. We smoke cool. I wasn't, you know. So all the youngins say, get the cool, Charlie, get the cool. You know what I mean? I say, all right, give me the cool. You know what I mean? But look, something happened, man. Something happened down there, man. I had my own bed again. Right? When I went to sleep, man, I realized, you know, they gave me my own bed and shit. Right, I ain't have to share beds with my brother and them no more. We got to eating real food and shit. Frosted Flakes and all that shit. I wasn't eating powdered eggs and shit no more. You know what I mean? I made a conscious decision standing outside of R&D that day. I'm young, man. Right? I said, you know what? If I ever get released from here, I'ma continue to break the law. Because I'm living down here better than I'm living at home. And that's what I've done, man. Everywhere I went, I couldn't stop using, man. At the end of my motherfucking story, man, I was walking into the church naked off of PCP. You know? I would smoke that shit, my clothes would come off, and I'd walk. I interrupted church service, and look, the police came in there one time, and they put the police out, and Father Kip and them covered me up and prayed for me. And Sister Murray said, Eric is going to be all right. And as soon as I left there, I used again. When I got there, Lord, man, every canteen book I got, before it hit my hand, I owed it up. I couldn't stop, man. So when I came to Knock College Announce, and they was talking about a reflection, right? You know, it was easy to see that the first step was like a postponement of a funeral from taking place. And you know what? Step two was so simple. Step two, I was confronted with a question. It was a simple-ass question. Step two, say, Eric, do you believe it would be insane to smoke again? I mean, it's some simple shit. I mean, it's a yes or no answer. Look. I don't know how you use, man. I use with some motherfuckers to say, when I die, blow me a shotgun in a motherfucking casket and then hit it for me. That's how I use. So in two, I was confronted with a question. Do you believe that it would be insane to use again? If my answer is yeah, then my belief has grown. And I'm ready for step three. But if it's no, then maybe I need to go back and look at my story and find out why. And the third step was asking me, like, to continue with the program, to make a decision. To make a decision to go on with the rest of the program. To make a decision to no matter what take place from this day forward, I promise to God I won't use no matter what. That I would persevere. That I would take an inventory. That I would try to find out the burdens and the traps that this thing got laid for me. You know, something Jimmy K said, man, that just hit my spirit. He said even addicts didn't believe this would work the way we had it planned. There's some people in here right now that really ain't believe that this thing would work the way this shit was laid out when you first got here. I'm telling you, man. So I had to be aware of the burdens and traps. Yeah, to sort through the confusion and contradiction. For what, though? The mess I made in my life, that's some basic shit. The solution is spiritual in nature. For what, though? Sort through the confusion for what? To be aware of the burden and trap. For what? Because this thing is so insidious. Yes, it is. Walston, that when she do leave, she will be the reason why I'm hurt. She will be the reason why I'm in a fetal position. Instead of the defect of character that put me there. So the fifth step is asking me to identify the exact nature. So in order to identify the exact nature, I have to remove the individual that's involved with the thing, man. As long as I'm looking at the individual, I will never get to the answer. The individual has to be removed in order for me to identify the exact nature of this program. And why is that? Because we're talking about a message, right? What is the message? What is the message of narcotics? You got one half say, well, fuck it, I'm a member when I say I am. The other half say, I am too. But look, what is the message? Hey, look. I don't know if y'all have a BJ's in y'all neighborhood, right? BJ's a supermarket. They sent me a free 60-day, 30-day BJ membership card. And I went in that motherfucker. I loaded up the cot. And when I got to the rest, I handed the lady a goddamn membership card. And she looking at me like I ought to smoke some crack or something. She like, okay. I'm like, well, how can I? She said, where your money at, babe? I said, I'm a member. You have to remember that being a member gets you here. These are the principles that makes our recovery possible. You can be in service. You can go to the dance. Right? You can read Who's an Addict. But without the steps, man, you just a goddamn member. And it's important, man, to allow the steps to elevate me because Walston said it, the message is transformed spiritually because it takes an act of providence to take a derelict and transform him to somebody that a person that he once used with that's still in the lifestyle can see him and say, God damn. Can you say his name changed? Man, my name at the end was Dirty Earth. Look, check this shit. You want to know the, look, Dirty Earth. I'm in Costco shopping. I'm having it in a motherfucker. I got my chef outfit on. And I turned out of the alley, the motherfucker say, Dirty Earth! My fucking store, look, the store packed. I spotted with one of them spiritual eyes. And the closer she got, the more empathy I got. Because the closer she got, the more I could see that she was in the lights there. And the last time she saw me, my name was Dirty Earth. And she was with her mother. She say, Mom, get with Dirty Earth. Her mother came up to me and said, Eric, how you been, baby? You look good and woo-woo. I got to telling her what the program and you people under God had done for me. She said, what? I said, yeah, I went back to school. I got my high school diploma. I was 48. I said, then I went and got my degree. You know what I mean? I'm a chef now. And she slowing up. As soon as her daughter turned the corner, she said, Eric, can you help her? I'm talking about the attraction rather than promotion, where it counts the most at. See, the other fellowship makes it so plain that you can't duck it. They just tell you flat out, your job is now to go to the most sought spot on earth and set you in a raid. And if you do this with your motives clear, God will keep you in arms. But in this program, we got to decode shit because people come up here with this bullshit instead of just simply saying how it was, what happened, and what it's like now. So, in sorting through prayer and meditation, I begin to realize that when the addict put the drug down, check this shit out. That little kid that was in Beverly Hills, I had two dreams, man. One dream was to go to Hollywood, right? You ever smoke so much shit, man, that you smoke your dreams away? That you, like, you done gave up on the goddamn dreams. I smoked so much stuff, I just gave up on the dreams. They was gone. I forgot about them. And then the World Convention came to San Diego. And the addict I met in Baltimore, I called him from the airport. And they was going to the hotel room. They was like, what you doing, shorty? I said, man, I didn't come out here. I'm too close to my goddamn dream. I called one of us, and he guided me to Hollywood. And I spotted the sign in the Hollywood Hills, and I started crying, right? Right. I'm talking about what narcotics anonymous do if you put the drug down and work the program, lost dreams will be reawakened. There's so many gangsters in here, I can guarantee you when you was a kid, you ain't one big gangster. My other dream was to go to the University of Notre Dame. My brother and I, man, when we was in Beverly Hills, our dream was Notre Dame football. I was a Notre Dame fan before I came a Redskin fan. I'm standing at the bus stop on the way to work one day, and a gentleman walked past with his daughter. He asked me, do I know how to get to an airport? I said, of course. I told him, I said, I can show you. He said, you don't have to do that. Then he said, what you know about that hat you got on? On this day, it just so happened to be a Notre Dame hat. Yeah. So I hit him with a 2-minute rundown of a little boy dream. He said, Eric, give me your name, number, address, and email address. I am the athletic director of the University of Notre Dame. I'll make that dream come true. I didn't do nothing. The only thing I done was politely answered his question. And like the book say, part of sanity is rightly learning how to rightly relate to other people. You know, so my sponsor and I, we're going to fly out in October and catch Notre Dame in Oklahoma up in South Bend. So, you know, I have to always remember, man, that my true state, he was talking about how y'all know my story, man. You know, and I remember when it was over, I had a brain operation in 99, right? I had two brain operations. I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. I had 5 years clean, and you know, I had an operation. I was scared, and after a week, I went back in, and they done the operation all over again because y'all gave me so much love and support. You know what I mean? I never healed properly. So where I'm at right now, man, is, you know, I haven't had a physical since that 99 operation. So I went and got an operation, right, and another tumor came. Right? I have another tumor. Right? And this tumor is around my gland, what he was talking about. That's why I was, me and James looking at each other. And what this tumor do, it affects my sexual drive, right? You know, I would tell you the reason why I ain't been fucking for real. it's because I'm spiritual and I've been waiting on her. Right? But the truth of the matter is, you know, it's been affecting my sexual drive, right? And I take that 162 thing, right? Testosterone and to build mine up, right? And just give me a couple more months. Huh? Yeah. I just want to stay in line with the topic. No, but look. But that shit working, man. You know? That thing working. And I don't want to put myself in position, right, where you know, I blow it out again. Especially for somebody who I don't plan on dying with. Right?
Share, man.
Right? You know, when the last relationship, you know, it, just what they talk about, finding somebody who believes in you and want to help you in your recovery. When I got clean, I came in here, you know, when I got in treatment, the doctor said, sign your name, you're going to get a check. I just signed my name, and I was on disability. Right? But I had somebody that grabbed me that believed in me. And they encouraged me to go and get a job and go back to school and all this stuff. And then we hooked up, and we bought a home and a car and all this stuff. And when the relationship was over, you know, I let her have all that. And then people say, man, you dumb as a mother, hunchy. What you get that woman in the house for? She walked through two brain operations with me. She loved me until I was able to love myself. And what the 11th step is talking about, if God, look, if God can get me off a crack, if I ask him for anything, he'll give it to me if I rightly relate myself. And so through prayer and meditation, to improve my contact with God, you know, it takes courage, man, to walk forward in spite of all the negativity and that stone that you know. It takes courage for that. So, you know, if this is your first convention, welcome, man. And I was scared earlier, man, you know, but the guy sent me that picture, man. You know, they say, what was your secret? Right? Fifth Step talks about secrets. You know. I had a secret when I got clean. The secret was, I had two secrets. One was, I hated my mother. And when I got clean, y'all was saying, you know, y'all parents done the best you can. And y'all was saying it so much that, I was ashamed to say that. So I held that in. I held it in. Because every time I went somewhere, my mama and them, but the truth of the matter is, my mama didn't do the best she could. And I had a right to feel like that. It wasn't until I heard my mother's story where I was able to emphasize on her and realize that she done the best she could. But before I could hear her story, I was there for a reason. My mother had a responsibility to take care of me from point A to point B. She didn't do that. From C The Z is my responsibility. From A to B was her. She didn't do that. And for that purpose, she belonged on the list. For that purpose, she had the right to have me mad at her. But today I love my moms, man. And the other secret? The other secret was I was mad at God. I thought it was bad to me. You know, I thought it was a bad thing to be mad at God, man. And you know, in your spirit and quiet hour, you can hear him saying, Eric, I already know you're mad at me. I need you to say it. I thought I was hearing voices. I said, where'd that come from? You know, because my nephew got killed, man, I was using. My nephew was 16, man. That crushed me, man. 16. They shot him up, man. They hit him like a dog. That crushed me, man. I hated God. I hated him for taking me out of my foster parents' house. I hated him, man. And one day I just bust out crying, and I just told him I hated him. And I felt so much better, man. But that's my buddy, man. I love that guy, man. So look, man, I just want to thank this area, man, for asking me to come. And I'm going to keep coming back, man.